I want to begin sharing today with metaphors that allow us to share life. Metaphors rule religion, philosophy, poetry, and prose because metaphors allow us to talk about things unseen with words that have more apparent and demonstrative meaning. We can only speak and write from our own perspective, and each of us as individuals use metaphor to highlight or expose hidden meanings to the light of day, which is itself a metaphor. Neither scientists nor mathematicians, theologians, philosophers, engineers, poets, artists, and so on can talk about their fields of study or their art, much less their personal lives, without the use of metaphor. The only person who can speak absolutely truth in itself without the use of metaphor is God, because God sees everything and acts from an absolute perspective, eternity, which excludes time and place. Thus, God can speak only one word from eternity because there is no time nor need for her to say more. And that one word must say it all directly without metaphor. That is why the Gospel of John says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." For us humans here below, who use speech in its variety of forms to live in a world, metaphor translates the inner life to the outer world. And metaphor requires separation. The bridge of meanings that metaphor creates makes speech possible between separate beings, a speaker and a hearer. Even talking to myself, that is, thinking, requires that I am able to split myself into two selves so I can associate ideas and respond to my conscience, which is just another speaker inside of me. Now, our two UU hymnals are replete with songs about the desire for unity with others. This fact may be misunderstood to support the opinion that unity is always desirable over separation. We should note, however, that the nomenclature used for this category in the hymnal is unity and diversity. There is indeed strength in numbers of people gathered into a union. This strength is what gave rise to labor unions, for instance. But it is clear that the purpose of presenting a strong, unified front to the world in the name of love, as we do, as Unitarian Universalists, is to show that diversity and the unique power of differences separate people who welcome the other person as other, provides the power to the religious engine, because otherness is the fuel. Otherness is the spark of tension and movement that provides the explosive power in our Unitarian Universalist combustion engine. We seek community in our congregations and in the worldwide web of life, just as our principal state. But our togetherness should not be that like a flock of stupid sheep huddled together in a pasture under the watch of a barking sheepdog. That simple, unthinking unity is not good. Unity can mean acquiescence to the ruling party. Remember that even thinking requires otherness. I split myself into two so that I can talk to myself. Sometimes unity can be achieved by the determinism of pseudoscience or bad philosophy, where persons are absorbed into an anonymous being, into a theory which unifies reality in order to understand it, but in doing so, commits violence to the other by forcing compliance to the theory and killing what does not fit in. Sometimes in real life, the sheepdog doesn't wait for the wolf to attack the sheep. Now, please indulge me as I switch metaphors. I'm reminded of Hegel's insight that where there are no differences, no otherness, it is like the night in which all cows are black. No doubt about it, we find ourselves in community. However, in community, I will not find myself if I focus on myself as simply mirroring the community, as if all of us really are just one. The blessing of community is welcoming the other as not the same as me. I find myself only outside of myself in the other's difference. And this requires radical separation. Now, a person as a who, not as a what or a thing, has no reason for being, has no explanation, no definition, and has no creator, because she has no cause. Her reason for being would be just an explanation, would it not? And isn't a person's worth and dignity a matter of the goodness that is beyond reasons for being? I don't love someone for reasons. I love them just because they are. Leibniz, the late 17th and early 18th century polymath, had it wrong. His principle of sufficient reason, which basically says that all things have a reason to exist, his principle of sufficient reason, which Leibniz understood to apply to absolutely everything, does not apply to anomalies, which is what we are. Anomalies are one case, which do not fit into a species or a genus. It is interesting to note that even as the principle of sufficient reason applies to everything for Leibniz, even God is not exempt from it. God is trapped insofar as even God has to obey reason's rule. The rule of metaphor in personal relations, on the other hand, does not pertain to God. God cannot use speech, because dialogue requires separation and time. God can only say himself. God can only hear himself. There is no other for God to talk to. Time rules all, and time is of the essence in the rule of metaphor. Time erupts. It is the epiphany of transformations, metaphors, revelation of otherness. The language of ethics is prior to reason. We have time because we are born into it, and time allows what has not appeared before to arise out of the blue. Once we are born, we do have time. In fact, since as persons, we came from nowhere and no when, we take on the very time of the world. In birth, we take on time itself, ageless, before anyone living now or in the ocean of the past, before anyone can remember when there wasn't time. When we are born, we are older than old age, older than anyone can remember. We are bottomless. Let's take a look at how one mighty thinker of the 5th century of the Common Era wrestled with this. Augustine of Hippo Regius engages in an inner dialogue made possible by time in his book Confessions. Quaestio mihi factus sum, he says. I have become a question for myself. His inner dialogue is a self-questioning and questioning of the God Augustine finds within himself, thus placing God within time, a riddle. Augustine says that birth means beginning, the impossible riddle of the possibility of time itself. Beginning itself makes no sense unless time is already assumed. And yet Augustine says that time itself was created by God from nothing. Questions upon questions upon questions. The world on elephants who never forget, sitting on turtles on more turtles. Questioning itself points to the experience of time. Time is thus not a given fact, and it is certainly not just a concept. Time is the ocean that being floats in because time unfolds possibilities. Time is not one fact among many. Facts are always facts of being. When I say something is a fact, I mean that it is. Yet being itself is everywhere temporal. Being is becoming, handed over to time. Therefore, being is itself bottomless and separate. We are separate in our beginnings once we appear in the world. We are also separated from the others. How could there be others if we were all the same? And how could there be time without its passing within itself as it separates from itself, past, present, and future? Augustine points out that the present splits itself so much into past and future that the present becomes something that cannot even be pinned down. Time and space are quite real, so real, in fact, that I can always ask what came before, after, or outside anything, even the universe, hence the quote on the cover of your order of service. For just as surely as I am as ageless as time, insofar as I am always in a world of time, I am utterly bottomless, like the world which sits on elephants, sitting on a turtle, sitting on God knows what in ancient Indian cosmology. In some schemes, the turtle is supported by a giant snake which is swallowing its own tail to complete the circle as a unity. But what is the snake resting on? If there is no snake, what is the turtle sitting on? In this scheme, the cosmos is both bottomless and an anomaly. So too is my obligation to the others as other. The ethical relationship that has been laid on me when I was born is always there because I cannot have closure with it. There is no rational balance sheet that determines when my obligations have been met. There is no bottom line to show when the bill has been paid because the bill is always past due. There is no bottom line, and that is the nature of the good. Beyond being, beyond reason, infinity beyond the totality. The past and all the good and the bad that comes with it is mine when I am thrown into the world at birth. I, personally, as a separate and unique individual and not as a member of a universal concept, have accountability laid on me. And since there is no bottom to the past, there is no end to my obligations to respond to the world or to the other person ethically. However, there is also no end to the resources of the past to enable me to respond. I have a bottomless well of human experience that I inherit when I arrive on the scene. I have been given the power to make a unique difference. My being thrown into the world at birth throws me into the past, vast and immemorial in the form of a bottomless well, so old that no one can remember the beginning or even imagine a beginning. We draw the water of goodness from this wonderfully dizzying bottomless abyss, the well from which springs more water than it can possibly hold. Amen.